They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back, faithful listeners and avid fans of the Magellans of the Magellans of the Movies podcast. Almost said the Magellans of the Mogollions. I am your host, Nathan Mogollions, joined as always by my brother and co-host, Elliot Mogollions. Elliot, it was a bit of a big week for trailers, maybe not for everyone, but for me, it was a big week for trailers because two movies that I am very interested in seeing, very excited to see, received their first trailers this week. Elliot, have you seen either of these movies? Mickey 17, Bong Joon-ho's next movie with Robert Pattinson, received its first trailer, and then Blitz, Steve McQueen's upcoming film, also received a trailer. Did you see either of these movies? And if you did, do you have a reaction?
No. Both questions. I've heard of Mickey 17. I'm excited about that. Isn't the Blitz? Is that about the Blitz in World War II?
It's about a son who is separated from his mother during the London Blitz, I believe.
Okay. I mean, I like Stephen King. Actually, I almost said Stephen Queen, which is that's wrong on
way off.
I like Steve McQueen. I would be interested in that. But I don't have my watch history on YouTube, so I don't get recommendations when I go to the website where it's like, oh, you might like this. So there's really no way for me to hear about these trailers unless I happen to see them on, IGN or something.
Well, that's too bad. I thought both of these trailers looked... Well, I thought Blitz looked really good. I'm very excited for Blitz. I thought the sequences that were in the trailer of the actual Blitz, of the bombing of London, looked incredible, looked really, really exciting and dramatic, and it appeared to have some sort of more surreal sequences with flowers or something. But it looked really, really good. Saoirse Ronan, I believe, is playing the mother of the young boy who goes missing, who is lost in the shuffle of the Blitz. And she's a very talented actress. She's always a highlight in movies. So I'm very, very excited for this film. Mickey 17, I thought looked like just kind of more of Bong Joon-ho's sensibilities. It looks like it's more comedic than Parasite was. It looks more like something like Memories of Murder or Snowpiercer isn't comedic, but both of those movies have a certain vibe where they're not taking what's happening ultra seriously, and it kind of feels like a heightened sort of reality. Snowpiercer, especially, and then also Memories of Murder. But it was giving me the same vibes as those movies. Robert Pattinson is reportedly doing a really goofy accent for the whole movie. It didn't seem that goofy from the trailer. Mark Ruffalo is in it, and it looked to be sporting the exact same hairstyle as his character from Poor Things, which is just a crazy crossover. But I thought the trailer looked really good. I'm very excited to see this movie. I love original, not original, it is based on a short story or a novella or something. But I love science fiction stories that run with a fun science fiction concept. In this case, a man who signs over his rights to be cloned every time he dies. So the 17 in the title refers to this being the 17th version of Mickey, who has passed away due to complications in planetary exploration.
Wow, that does sound great. It doesn't sound as good, however, as The Passion of the Christ, oh, good grief. Which Nathan said he didn't want to talk about, but that's just too darn bad, because I think that we have to talk about it. We have to acknowledge the elephant in the room, and that's the fact that Mel Gibson is making a sequel to The Passion of the Christ. That's one of the stupidest ideas I've ever heard. Even setting aside the fact that wouldn't exactly call Mel Gibson a great ambassador for Christ.
Oh boy.
I mean, what even is it? What's it even gonna be? Is it gonna be about the harrowing of hell? Because that would be hilarious.
I believe that is the concept for the movie, that it is taking place immediately after Jesus's death on the cross, that it follows him entering hell, killing demons in hell, I guess. I don't know where you go if you die in hell as a demon. And then rescuing, all of which I believe is based on apocryphal texts. I don't think there's anywhere in the Bible that says what Jesus was doing as he was waiting his 3 days to be resurrected. But yeah, it's such a ridiculous concept. Can't help but feel like this is kind of just Mel Gibson doing everything he possibly can to remain relevant. So he's trying to make a sequel to his highest grossing movie to try and keep making some money somehow. I really hope it doesn't work. I hope it doesn't make any money, because it sounds like a terrible idea. Obviously, I could be wrong, and the movie could be, you know, just a beautiful exploration of Christianity and the beauty of the gospel and things like that, but I kind of doubt it. I would agree with Elliot's assessment that Mel Gibson is a subpar ambassador for Christianity and Jesus in general.
Well, there but for the grace of God go I. You know?
So true. So
everyone's
true.
Got their specks and their planks and their eyes. You are correct. The harrowing of hell is only a thing in the Catholic tradition. I don't know what it's based on. Maybe it's based on someone just thought, like, hey, wouldn't it be crazy if? And then some pope heard about it and was like, that's a good idea. Let's do that. I can't remember what I was going to say. Something else. Dang it.
Wow. I don't remember. Well, yeah, if it comes back to you, feel free to interrupt whatever we're doing at the time. Anyway, let's dive in and start talking about the movie that we're talking about today. I'm going to do the introductions for this movie here. Today we're talking about The Royal Tenenbaums, which is a 2001 film from Wes Anderson. You might know Wes Anderson from terrible TikToks trying to ape his style, or from his fantastic filmography of charming, just lovingly detailed, diorama-esque films that he's made. I believe he's made 11 feature-length films at this point. And this was, I would say, his biggest movie to date. I would say it's probably his breakout hit. It was nominated for an Oscar for screenplay. It was nominated for Golden Globes in a couple of different categories. It's the movie that I see most often cited as his best movie when I look at most rankings, either this or The Grand Budapest Hotel, which we have also reviewed if you want to go back and listen to that for more of our thoughts on Wes Anderson. But I really wanted to review this movie because this is my least favorite Wes Anderson film, and I watched it kind of early in my journey with Wes Anderson movies, and so I really wanted to know if it held up more for me coming back, being more familiar with Wes Anderson's style. This was also a movie that I was somewhat interested in. Elliot, your thoughts on it, because I think for most people, when they talk very highly about this movie, they talk about the characters, the emotion of the film's story. And so I'm always fascinated to learn what stories really resonate with you and which ones don't, because I feel like sometimes I have no concept of which of a story and whether or not it's going to resonate with you. So I wanted your thoughts. I wanted my own thoughts. Elliot, let's jump to the your thoughts portion, because you're going to have a hard time sharing my thoughts. Elliot, what was your experience with this movie? I think I'm not going to keep talking. What was your experience with this movie? What are your opening thoughts on this film?
Dude, leap, jump, dive. Do you have any other verbs for getting started?
Let's propel into the discussion.
This movie's all right, I guess.
Oh, wow.
So I like Wes Anderson okay. I don't think he's fantastic. I don't like him as much as you, I don't think. I find his style to be charming, but sometimes I get the feeling that his movies are a little superficial, especially his stop-motion animated movies, like Isle of Dogs. I was pretty unimpressed with. Yeah. This movie, it's definitely recognizable as one of his. Like, if someone showed me clips of this movie, I'd be like, yeah, that's Wes Anderson right there. So the problem is, I think, mostly with the writing. Especially with the characters, because I did not buy Royal's switch at all. Like, he just straight up decides, oh, I guess I'm a good person now, which I found very unsatisfactory. I could not have cared less about the romantic plot between, I can't even remember their names,
Richie and Margot.
Yes, dude, that was so undercooked, because they spend 15 minutes of screen time together, and I'm supposed to believe that he's willing to commit suicide over the idea that she's not interested in him? I mean, seriously, Wes, let's pick it up a little bit. Let's have maybe 25 minutes of screen time, a whole half hour, even something like that. And it didn't help that. So Wes Anderson, it seems like he often asks his actors to play everything very deadpan. And sometimes that works. I would say in this movie, it kind of doesn't, because what we're dealing with is meant to be fairly raw, emotional family dysfunction. So the deadpan performances by Gwyneth Paltrow and the guy who plays Richie, I don't even know, and to a lesser extent, Gene Hackman, I thought, that's just such a bad idea to try to make a movie based around the airing out of decades-old hurts and grievances and missed opportunities and all the kind of stuff that comes with being a part of a dysfunctional family, and to ask your actors try to play this like you have never experienced a human emotion in your life. I think that was a fairly significant miscalculation. So, yeah, maybe this movie isn't okay. It's actually a little bit bad because I didn't find it particularly funny or engaging. It was kind of just like, it's kind of just there. And there were times where I was like, if I was a less conscientious moviegoer, I would be on my phone right now. So.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. I think I enjoyed this movie more than I did the first time I saw it. But I still think I agree with a lot of your critiques. And I think maybe we should start the discussion at Wes Anderson's signature style. Like you said, if someone showed you clips from this movie, you'd be able to pretty quickly deduce, oh, this is a Wes Anderson movie, or this is someone trying to ape his style. But it is, in fact, Wes Anderson. And I think the thing about Wes Anderson movies that can make them very good and interesting, but makes this movie a little harder to get into, is the fact that they are so clearly constructed, right? That there's elements in which the movie is letting you know, hey, this is a movie. This is kind of vague. And this becomes more and more apparent as Wes Anderson's style continued, that his movies become increasingly transparent in their movie-ness. But I think this movie is an example where it's hard for me to get into, like you said, the airing out of decades-old grievances in this dysfunctional family. Because the movie is kind of keeping me at an arm's length. And so in some of his movies, I think it works really well. For instance, Asteroid City, I think the way that movie examines, the way that movie pushes you away while pulling you in with interesting questions, for me at least, is a fascinating viewing experience. But I think there's very little that's engaging me to pull me in as the movie and the actors, like you said, very deadpan, very very much seems like they're not taking any of this as seriously as maybe the movie would want us to. It just doesn't, the push and pull doesn't work for me. I feel too pushed away. And I really enjoyed the movie for the first like hour or so, where it was just kind of classic Wes Anderson sort of shenanigans, that the opening is very Wes Anderson, that he's going to throw a lot of characters at you, a lot of information. There's going to be a lot of inserts of text and inserts of silly little gags and characters doing kind of goofy things, like the Tenenbaum kids holding a press conference and talking to a whole bunch of reporters. Those are classic Wes Anderson sort of things in my mind. But as the movie went on, and as it went to, like you said, some of these emotional higher moments, like Richie attempting suicide, like Royal kind of coming around and working to be a better person, it just doesn't work. It starts to lose me, because I don't really care a ton about these characters, and I don't find the depths of the familial grievances to be explored in a way that is new or interesting or even very compelling. So while I like decent chunks of this movie, I do think it fails to draw me in the way that it seems like it succeeds with so many other people.
See, like, even, I think I've talked about this before, that I don't care about movies as a medium. That, like, a lot of people like, for a lot of people, like Nathan, for example, as he's just said, that kind of thing of just like stylized things happening with the camera on them. That's enough for them. But for me, like, a movie is not a movie, any piece of art is not just like a painting in a hotel room that is just there to occupy space and look pretty. Like, I want more from that. I want more from my art than just like jangling keys. Just a distraction, just something superficially pretty. So I wouldn't say that there's any part of this movie that I like enjoy. There were parts of this movie that I didn't hate, and parts of this movie that I was indifferent to, but I think that's like kind of as good as it gets.
Wow.
There is one joke that made me laugh when Royal, it's revealed that his cancer diagnosis has been faked. And that's throughout the whole movie, he's, well, not throughout the whole movie, but throughout most of the movie, he's said that he has cancer in order to reconnect with his family. And then he gets revealed and he's standing there and he's like, I do have high blood pressure. I thought that was pretty funny. But that might be the high point of the movie for me. And that, I mean, yeah, that sounds really harsh, but just to contextualize this, I was never like bored or irritated by this movie. Well, there were a few times where I was irritated by the movie, but there weren't any times where I was like, this is just painful. Mostly I was indifferent to what was happening. And it is a lot for a lot of the reasons that you said, that the movie fails to draw me in to what should be a very emotional, engaging moment in these characters' lives. But I wouldn't say that, for me, the problem is not that that I'm at too far removed from the characters in order to care. For me, the problem is that the script just did not succeed in getting me to care. That the script is aiming for these really big emotional gut punches. And there's just no setup for them. So the payoff is just not there. Because like Royal having this come to Jesus moment, and Richie attempting suicide, I was like, wait. What? This was probably the low point of the movie for me, that I was like, this is such a drastic, critically important character moment that has just come out of nowhere to me. And it's not necessarily that the movie didn't try to set it up, like he's been on a boat ride for like decades or something. Because he doesn't think he could be with Margot. It's that I didn't have a good sense of his attraction to Margot, what he thought about her. So even the idea that he would go on a boat ride because he couldn't be with her, that's something that I didn't understand. That's a character trait that I didn't understand, because they spend such little time together. And, like, they don't seem to really care that much about each other. Like, they're not really trying to help each other out or do nice things for each other or be there for each other or talk about their feelings or anything like that. They're kind of just orbiting around each other. But that's not the kind of deeply felt emotional connection that would drive a person to suicide. So, I mean, it's just like, at that point, there's no salvaging the movie. When the most important moment for who is one of the most important characters in the movie isn't there, I mean, there's just nothing you can do. It's over.
Well, I think that's maybe overemphasizing the importance of Richie and Margot's storyline. So I would like to, I'd like to pivot to maybe talking a little more specifically about some of the characters and some of the actors. I think we've already said most of what can be said about, or I've said most of what I would say about Richie and Margot. I don't find them hugely compelling. I don't think Gwyneth Paltrow got any direction for this. I think that's just her giving it her all in terms of acting. That's a bit of a zinger. Yeah. I'm just kidding. She's okay in Shakespeare in Love, but she's, yeah. There's a reason I don't think she crops up much more in Wes Anderson movies. She does okay. I think, again, a lot of it is Margot is kind of an enigma, kind of a classically enigmatic female character who's being a bit of an object of desire for a couple of different characters in the movie, three to be precise, in terms of characters with actual lines. And then Richie, again, he's okay. I think it's Luke Wilson, playing him. And I think he does an okay job. It's not...
Wait, no, I think... Oh, yeah, no, you're right. I keep on getting the Wilsons mixed up.
Yeah, well, actually, there's a third Wilson brother who does have a voice cameo as one of the two tennis commentators during the little brief time where they show Richie's meltdown in his final tennis match. It's Wes Anderson and Andrew Wilson, which threw me for a loop because I thought for sure one of them was Jason Schwartz. But anyway. Luke Wilson, he does okay as Richie, I think. But my favorite actors in this whole piece who I really, really enjoy is I think Gene Hackman does a really good job. I think I like Royal more than you. I don't think his arc is like incredible, but I find him all of the funniest moments in the movie, in my opinion, stem from him. I think when he's talking to Chaz's kids between the fence, and he says how he was so sad to hear about the death of their mother, and he says, like, she was a dang attractive woman. That's a crazy thing to say to the children of a woman who died as tragically as she did. He also keeps cursing in front of them, which I found very funny. And just in general, I thought he was one of the better parts of the movie, even if I didn't think his arc was super well done. I always do enjoy seeing characters making amends, so I enjoyed that. Honestly, I think my favorite actor in the entire ensemble is probably Ben Stiller as the third Tenenbaum child, Chaz Tenenbaum. He...
Terrible name.
Chaz?
Chaz, yeah, what is that?
It's gotta be short for something, like...
Cheswick?
No, it's genuinely just Chaz, I think. C-H-A-S. Not even a Z.
That's just embarrassing.
Yeah, Chaswick? That's a bad name, too. But anyway, Ben Stiller, I really, really enjoy his performance in this movie. He... by a large margin, I would say, has the most emotion of anyone. He's the Tenenbaum child who's the most angry about Royal trying to insert himself back. He clearly has the most hurt feelings towards his father and his father's treatment of him. His performance in one of those final scenes where he says to Royal, "I've had a really tough year, Dad," is really, really good. And like I said, I was not super emotionally engaged for much of this movie, but that one line reading from Ben Stiller did kind of make me feel a little bit of emotion, like, dang, that he has had, that character has had kind of a tough year, and him, you know, trying to get through saying that without crying was it wasn't like I was moved to tears, but I did find it to be a particularly powerful moment. And yeah, I also think Chaz is one of the more well-developed. I mean, all of Wes Anderson's characters are kind of just a bag of quirks disguised as a character in some ways. And I think I find Chaz's quirks most endearing. Him and his kids always wearing track suits is funny to me. Them planning for ridiculous different eventualities, I think, is a good character moment, in that, you know, his wife died in this insane manner that makes him feel like he now has to be prepared for everything. But so it's a good character moment. It's a fun little vignette. I like Ben Stiller quite a bit. And some of the other actors, I think they do okay jobs. Angelica Houston, Bill Murray is, I don't even understand why he's in the movie. It feels like he does very little. And then Danny Glover as a lawyer. He has another one of the moments that made me laugh, when he's walking with Angelica Houston's character, who is the mother, Tenenbaum, and they're working at like a construction site, and he falls in a hole. Just kind of made me chuckle. But yeah, what did you think of some of the other characters who aren't Richie and Margot, and I guess Royal, who you've already talked a little bit about?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Gene Hackman, he's a great actor, and he's doing a very good job here. Same with Ben Stiller, in a slightly more emotional role that for someone who's usually considered a comedy actor. That just made me think of that fantastic burn in Ben Stiller's episode of Between Two Ferns. Did you ever consider following your parents into comedy?
No.
So that's all good. And yet, I just come back to, I did not really connect with these characters. And for me, that's, I mean, I've said it before, I'll say it again, that's just a fatal flaw. Because if I don't care about the characters, then I really struggle to be like, oh, well, at least the acting's good. Like, yeah, that is true, but why should I care? If there's nothing to truly engage me, truly move me. I also thought that the resolution between Chaz and Royal was, it was just nothing. Like, Royal saves his children from getting run over by a car, and I clocked it, like, the instant that the car was introduced in the scene, I was like, Royal's gonna save the children, that's gonna be the resolution. And I was like, that is so lame. Because, I mean, it's just so low effort. Right, to have a character who's one part of a somewhat hostile dynamic do something nice for the other character, and then that is the I've lost the word. That's the facilitator of their of peace between them. I mean, that is lame, Wes. That is lame.
Well, so I'll keep that in mind for when we're estranged and I could save your children. And I'm like, well, it's too cliche. Elliot wouldn't want it this way.
A good act is its own reward, Nathan.
That's
Aristotle or someone said that.
That's so true.
Someone good. Yeah, so, like, I'm sorry to keep on bringing it back to this, but I think that for every category that we bring up, whether it's good or bad, I'm going throughout this entire review, I'm just going to have to keep on coming back to, like, yes, this is good. Yes, this is bad. But why should I care? because the story itself, the raison d'etre for this movie is not there. So there's, I mean, it's just a movie without a soul.
Wow, that's really, I feel like that's really harsh.
What's, Nathan, what's the trial for a movie that gains the whole world but loses its soul?
Wow, good one. You're really quoting all of the hits here today. I guess I did forget to mention that Owen Wilson is in this movie as Eli Cash.
Always welcome.
Yeah. Again, I thought he did okay. I think some of his scenes are kind of funny, and I do think I appreciate, again, the level of detail that Wes Anderson puts in his movies beyond just, you know, the mise-en-scene of the shots, but the little character things to make sure the entire story is kind of cohesive, that even if it is kind of a cliche way to end it, I do think Eli's subplot with him having drug problems coming back to be the thing that he's driving the car that hits the, that has a chance of hitting Chaz's kids. I just like stuff like that where it's not a random thing that comes out of nowhere. It's part of the story. I also do think his, when he's talking to Margot and he said, you didn't even care about me until my reviews got good. And she says, yeah, well, and your reviews weren't even that good. That's, she's so mean to him for no reason. But yeah, I think otherwise for this movie, in terms of technical sort of elements, do I even have to say anything? I mean, this is a Wes Anderson movie. It looks really, really good. The composition of so many of these shots. I love one of the things that I noticed in watching this movie that I'm pretty sure is in a lot of his other movies. I love how often he accompanies movement of the characters with movement of the camera, even if they're in kind of a static sort of setting. He still tries to emphasize the characters moving in any way with the camera moving. And with very much letting you know that the camera is moving. He loves the shot when two characters are walking. He doesn't usually shoot it from in front of them to where them walking wouldn't be super obvious. Like, if you're walking on a sidewalk, there's nothing behind you to show movement. Everything that's showing movement is to the side. And typically, Wes Anderson shoots it from the side, so you can see in the background the buildings and the trees and everything moving as the characters move. And that's just something, you know, my little monkey brain is happy when movement accentuates movement. And Elliot being very dismissive towards art and visual art, movies are a visual medium. So when they look good, I'm happy. That's how I feel. I don't need to care about them. I'm just happy. But I do think, in terms of a critique here, I do think this is a movie where, and again, this is just my sense. I have very little evidence to back this up, but I get the sense from a lot of Wes Anderson's early movies that he just doesn't commit to his style as much as he does in his later films. And every time I watch one of them, I just wish he did commit more. Because every time there's a more basic sort of shot or just something that's much less visually interesting than a lot of the rest of the film, I'm just wishing for those other things. I mean, the thing that I love about Wes Anderson movies is that so many of the shots don't look like any other movie, and it doesn't look like anything anyone else would ever choose to shoot that way. So the moments in this movie, like when Chaz is chasing after Eli and it goes to a handheld, or when Chaz is just running around his house with his kids, the movie's in handheld, which is not usually what you see in a Wes Anderson movie, and it's much less controlled than I'm used to in a Wes Anderson film, and it's just not as interesting. It's not as visually interesting. It doesn't feel, it makes the movie feel somewhat less cohesive than I would like it to. And that is very much a carryover from the first time I saw this movie, that I was like, man, I wish everything would be in the same style. Because when it is, I just think it's movie magic.
Movie magic. Yeah, I definitely noticed that as far as Wes Anderson's style goes, this movie was not as inundated with it as something like Grand Budapest Hotel or Asteroid City, where it's just like, it's just off the charts. Which is
good.
It's up to audience interpretation whether or not that's a plus. Yeah, the movie definitely looks good. Wes Anderson, he's a good director. He makes stuff that is enjoyable to look at. But, I mean...
Oh, this again.
Like I said, the painting of a forest in a hotel room is nice to look at. But it doesn't... It means nothing. It's meaningless. It's just... It's like the feelies from Brave New World. It's just like, it's just light and color and sound meant to, on a very chemical level, induce pleasure, and that's just so shallow. So that doesn't really do much for me. I can acknowledge that it's good. And it did keep this movie from being a complete failure, but it didn't really, it didn't save it. It was never going to save it. Wes Anderson, he does not take kindly to empty space in his shots. No. Like, he wants there to be stuff all the time, which I think that's fine. I mean, I appreciate that he's very meticulous, and him and his, like, just the set dressers are all very, I don't know what the word is. They're all very good. They're all very talented.
Yeah.
So yeah. Did you notice anything about the music? I don't even remember if there was music in this movie.
There is some music. I think typically this movie is cited as one of the really early examples of Wes Anderson's soundtracking capabilities, that the music he chooses to use for his films is very highly regarded by a lot of people. I would agree with that. I like a lot of the song choices. I think the music that plays when Margot gets off the bus and Richie sees her for the first time is good. I like the music that's soundtracking Richie's suicide attempt. I think all of them are very good song choices to accompany the vibe of the scene that we're seeing, which I always really appreciate. I think the music otherwise, Elliot's...
I'm just imagining you watching this movie going like, man, I am loving this suicide attempt. This is groovy, bro.
I just mean that it, you know, the emotions that the visuals on the screen are making me feel are accentuated by the music and what that the song is trying to make me feel. That both of them are combining to make me feel feelings.
They should have played One is the Loneliest Number in that scene.
I think that would be a really inappropriate song choice. But I think otherwise, I don't love the score portions of the soundtrack. I think it sounds like characteristically quirky sort of Wes Anderson stuff. Yeah, that's, you know, that's my opinion.
Well, I'm pretty much out of things. I feel like I've said my piece on this movie. Like, I've said what I think about this movie. Nothing else that we can talk about is going to change it. So, do you have anything else?
No, you know, perambulate toward your final opinion, Elliot.
Yeah, I mean, I've said a lot of really harsh things about this movie, and I meant them, and I'm not apologetic for them. But this movie is not the worst thing I've ever seen in the world, and Wes Anderson's style is enjoyable. There are some funny jokes. Well, just the one, really, but it's pretty funny. There's good acting. All the stuff that saves it from, like, being totally dismal, but, like, again, it's a movie without a soul, and the trial for a movie that gains the whole world but loses its soul is that I give it a D+.
Wow, that's harsh.
And if you're wondering, like, how can a movie without a soul not be an F? Like, it's because movies that get Fs, like Once Upon a Time in America, are movies that have souls. They're just souls of evil. So that's why that happens.
Wow. Well, I think that's really harsh. I enjoyed this movie much more than I did on the first viewing. I still think the emotional heart of the movie is just a bit too far out of my reach. So it's still in the bottom rungs of Wes Anderson movies for me. But I think Wes Anderson is probably one of the most exciting directors currently working for me. I am a huge, huge fan of him. I am so, so excited for his next movie. So even the worst Wes Anderson movie is much better than a lot of other people's movies. I'm going to give it exactly a 7 out of 10.
I don't think you need to blame yourself for this, Nathan. I don't think that the movie's emotional heart is out of your reach. You can give yourself a little credit and say that it's just not there. Or not well, that it's not there, because you don't think that. But you can say that it's, like, not as good as you wanted it to be.
I don't know. It's so interesting to me that, like, so many of the reviews I see for this movie are people who are so, so moved by it. And I feel so little when I see it. And then the absolute reverse is true for, like, Asteroid City. That so many people I see, they're like, I don't care about this. Why should I care about this? Who cares about this? And I have yet to see that movie without crying. So, I don't know. This is, you know, people just be feeling different things. Also, before we do recommendations, Elliot, can I predict what your recommendation is going to be?
Sure.
Is it Noah Baumbach's Meyerowitz Stories?
It is!
Oh, let's go! Yes!
Good job, Nathan. I was kind of wondering, like, is he going to get it? Yes, I guess that I'll go first for recommendations.
Oh,
my
sure.
Recommendation is Noah Baumbach's The Meyerowitz Stories. A man for whom Father's Day is probably the worst day of all time, based on the movies of his that I've seen. Because, man, the fathers in these movies. yeah, so this is very similar to The Royal Tenenbaums in that it's about a it's not like a reunion, like a family reunion, but it is a family coming back together. Mostly it's about the siblings, the adult children of a very selfish, very, I don't know, just like very aloof father who's also an artist. And so it's about them reconnecting and learning to accept and live with their father's faults rather than, and this is one of the things that I really like about the movie, is that the father, who's played by Dustin Hoffman, he doesn't have a redemption arc. Mm-hmm. It's not about like the movie ending of him realizing his mistakes. It's much more realistic movie about coming to terms with the problems of the people who let you down, who were the most responsible for your well-being, who just kind of let you down. So I think that's really good and really moving. It is very funny. It's one of those rare movies where Adam Sandler is actually pretty funny. When I think about Adam Sandler and like his performance in this movie, our Uncut Gems, I'm like, dude, you are wasting your talent with nonsense like Grown Ups or Leo. I hated Leo, by the way. But he's really good in this. And so is Ben Stiller. There's another connection. Dustin Hoffman. I like Noah Baumbach quite a bit as a director. I like his style and his stories, which are typically about malaise affecting middle-aged professionals living in New York, who are usually working in the artistic scene. And I think that if you want that emotional gut punch, if you want that pathos that The Royal Tenenbaums lacks, the Meyerowitz stories has it.
Yeah, I agree. I think I watched that movie after you watched it and you recommended it kind of highly. So I definitely agree. I was trying to think of who the other sibling. I was like, it's Ben Stiller, and then it's a woman who I'm struggling to remember the actress's
yeah.
name. And then I was like, there's another male one, and who is it? And yeah, Adam Sandler does a very good job. Dustin Hoffman's really good in it. It is very funny. Yeah, good movie. Good prediction by me as well. Good job, me.
Huh. Elizabeth Marvel.
Oh, interesting. Anyway, my recommendation is another movie about family. It is the movie Still Walking, which is a Korean film about a family who is having a reunion for a reason that's revealed over the course of the film. I don't want to spoil what the reason for the family reunion is, but this is, for my money, the best depiction of a family reunion I've ever seen in a movie, in a film. It the way it depicts children having nothing to do in a grandparent's house that has technology from 20 years ago and nothing that they're really interested in is something that I feel very much feel as I'm watching the movie. It feels very much like my own experience at family reunions. The experience of different parts of the family coming together and kind of bad-mouthing other members of the family. And, you know, just that thing that you get in the car ride home from the family reunion, that it's like, oh, it looks like this person's doing this, and this person has quit their job, or this just, you know, kind of gossipy sort of things. This movie has so much of that, and it is just such a powerfully well done movie about family and about all of the issues that I think in families can often go unstated, and that you just keep on, you're just still walking. That it's one of the most depressing movies I think I've ever seen, because its final thesis is that none of these issues or problems that these people have with each other will ever be resolved or fixed or find any amount of betterment, which I think is a very depressing thing to think about. But I also think it's a very realistic thing that is very much how a lot of people live their lives. So I'm going to recommend Still Walking. I think it's a fantastically well done movie about families. It's so realistic. And even though it's coming from a different culture and a different language, there's no movie I've ever seen that I more powerfully felt the experience of going to a family reunion and the experience of being around family and all of the good and bad that kind of comes.
All right. I have not seen that movie, so I can't comment. But I tell you what I have seen. I saw it in a dream once, that life is hard and full of disappointments.
That's crazy.
And it's been with me ever since.
Wow. That's exciting, Elliot. I'd love to hear more about this dream. I have a dream that next week, the Jones at the Movies will release another episode.
On time.
On time, yeah. We do apologize for the lateness of this one. We've both been having large life events, which are very exciting, but also very time-consuming. So that'll get in the way of the things. Fortunately, it is going to allow me to start to funnel huge amounts of money into this podcast. So if you want to get on the ground floor, then shoot us an email to prove that you're here on the ground floor. You know, let us know your thoughts, movie requests, questions, anything you might want to discuss. You can send that email and we'll respond so promptly. Otherwise, we are going to release another new episode next week. We're really excited for you to tune into that. Thank you for listening to this episode, and we hope you have a great week.